Casey Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate.
Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. We are a center for retreats, spiritual guidance, Christian meditation, and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me in the studio to talk about our center, our programs, social justice, or different cultures. Today, my visitor is Brother Chris Popplewell. Brother Chris, a very warm welcome, and hi to my TL radio program.
Good morning. Thank you, Beate.
Brother Chris is a New Zealander. He's originally from Invercargill, the south of the South Island, and he's been working in the field of Catholic education for many years. This work has led him to countries like Tonga, Fiji, and even Timor-Leste. Brother Chris, what have your tasks been in these schools or in the education field?
For the most part, I've been a school principal in various places and then sometimes the director of the Catholic schools. I've always been keen on teaching and would try and do that wherever I could. My training has been particularly in science, but when you're working with fairly unqualified school staff, you end up having to teach just about everything. And so probably English teaching has been the most important part.
Yeah. And the schools that you taught at, they were Catholic schools or were they Marist schools? You're a Marist brother.
Yes. Yes, it's mostly Marist schools, but sometimes I've been filling in when I've been the director, always keen to try to keep going with some teaching. And so I've been filling in with various schools, but they'd always be Catholic schools other than teaching a bit at university sometimes.
So you just said it, and your subjects were a wide range.
They had to be.
And the students, you had the adult students, but also the children, what age group? Any age group?
In general, it was in secondary schools, but sometimes there's been the occasional, particularly the intermediate schools, connected with secondary. But in recent years, I've been doing more with adult education. Some of this has been trying to get teachers better qualified, particularly better able to work in English, because so much of the work around the Pacific is done in English. So adult education, both of people from the district, but also of teachers, that's the starting point, I think.
And in which language do you teach?
It's mostly been in English, but at different times I've had to do some basic work in probably a dozen different languages.
So the children in, or the young people in Tonga and Fiji, they were fluent in English and you could teach them science in English?
You had to, which meant you had to try to make sure that by the time they got to secondary school, they had a fairly good grasp of English. So what you would try to do is to get teachers who were very good in getting the students to understand and speak and even think in English. And at that stage, you could move into teaching science in English. This would be all right.
So would they be taught in like science, would they be taught in Tongan and in English or just in English?
In the early stages of education, they'd be taught in Tongan, but as they go along, there'd be more and more the introduction, particularly of English terms, but then as their English became better, you would try to make it entirely in English.
And how was the situation in Timor-Leste?
A much worse one, because well, there we were trying to prepare teachers. It was a teachers' college. And so we were trying to prepare teachers to be able to teach in Portuguese, because after the independence, Portuguese became the language to work in, where up till then the education system worked in Indonesian. And so we ended up with four different languages we had to use in the training college. There was the Portuguese we were trying to get our teachers to teach in Portuguese, the Indonesian, which they knew from the past, and so that became effectively a lingua franca, really. And then there was the Tetum, the local vernacular, and most people in Timor-Leste had an idea of that. And then the study for the teachers for degrees had to be done in English because we were working through the Australian Catholic University. In many ways, it was a mongrel mess of a language system.
Oh, my God. for those of you who've just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. If you miss any of our programs, please check out planetaudio.org/muffintalk, or visit our website or Facebook page at Tangaka Waiora Mercy Spirituality Center. Today my visitor is Brother Chris Popperwell, and Brother Chris has been to several countries, mainly Pacific, and has been teaching English but also filling in as head of Catholic schools, right?
Yes.
And why do somebody, why did you go to other countries to learn, to teach English? Is that something that the Maurice Brothers asked you to do, or was that something you put your hand up? Like the missionaries, Pope Francis has been talking about missionaries a lot in the last time. And what was your reason?
Yes, there was something of that, of just trying to be available to where there's need. There's a long tradition of Maurice Brothers running schools in the Pacific, and in particular the Tonga one. I was asked, would I go to set up a school? So it was to be something completely new. But the need has always been that local people did not have great qualifications. I'm thinking particularly back in the 1960s, 1970s, and you're left with poor quality of teaching. And so what you tried to do within a school was to have some expat people, particularly native speakers of English, and you would try to get them to both help the teachers to speak and teach in English, but also to deal directly with the students. And so you had all this business of, because the education system was geared to working in English for the higher level examinations and university work entirely English, you just had to try to deal with this English problem. And that was a way to do it. So that the first time that I was in American Samoa, for example, we had the whole teaching staff was expatriate brothers and sisters and volunteers. There were no local teachers. Today, I've been back there in the last few years, and of course there are virtually entirely local teachers, Samoans, but you still need the outside knowledge, particularly native English speakers, because the local language is often given as a mixture. When in speaking English, you're using, say, Samoan thinking and English words. And this problem, of course, can just be perpetuated because it's passed on to the students.
And that could lead to a pidgin English.
Well, you end up with a very distinctive Samoan English, and you've got to really try to improve the quality, especially if you're going to have people who are going to do advanced studies. Their knowledge of English has to be much higher than that. So you try to do what you can within schools, and students in general, once they're confident, they can do pretty well.
But that reminds me of the French language, for example, in Canada, because when the French Canadians, when they started their lives there in Canada, they broke the relationship to France for many, many years, and then the language developed in different ways, and there was more and more influence from the English language into the French of Canada. So I think that if you live in one setting, cultural setting, and then you have another language that comes from a different cultural setting, it's a big temptation to mix the two, and then it becomes another local language that is based on English in that case, if you say in the islands.
Oh, it's very true. Each country has its distinctive English, so probably there are more than 100 versions of English, but at least they're reasonably, because of the interaction that goes on, they're reasonably understandable one to another. Yeah. I find that the Portuguese of Brazil is vastly different to the Portuguese of Portugal.
Yes.
And so they're really, and it's the same problem as you mentioned, that once you separate people and you don't have the contact to the original, then you're going to have this, they develop as, what would you call them, separate dialects, really.
Yeah, well, there would be a different versions, I would call them.
Yes.
But it's like in Vanuatu with a Pishlama.
That's right, yes, yeah. Yes.
It's a kind of pidgin English. And Mass would be celebrated in all of these countries, would be celebrated in the local languages, right?
Mostly. If there's a large expat community, particularly in the bigger cities, then you'd have an occasional Sunday Mass in English. Sometimes you've got a newly arrived foreign priest who keeps using English, perhaps, or if coming from another island, might be using their own language, yeah, for Mass. So, and that brings up the whole question of priests in particular we think of, because their influence is very great. In coming from another country, then they will have a basic knowledge of English, sure, but it won't really be New Zealand English, in coming to here, for example. And the whole difficulty becomes that unless you keep learning the English, you're actually going to go backwards. And so you end up with the priest being unable to make the parishioners understand him. And there is this real need for adult education. I've found it so much with teachers, but it also applies to clergy.
In a way, they are also teachers in many ways.
They have to be.
They try to bring the message across, and so you need to understand the people and be understood.
Yes, I strongly recommend that all priests, in fact all people who want to work with other groups of people, need to have some basic training as teachers.
Yeah. And then every now and then do another refresher course.
Very definitely. The sabbatical idea of 1 year and seven, something like that. Yes, yeah. It is very necessary. In a sense, I might have had a bit of a sabbatical in Fiji recently, being in the novitiate, working with the novices there, the trainees who are to become brothers. And there I found that, well, when I was doing novitiate, you were very careful about the practices and keeping rules carefully, all that sort of thing, very, very structured life. And when you're free of all that, you tend to take shortcuts. And so I found that it was a very good refresher. So you need this refresher in spirituality as well as your language.
And are you practicing that here in New Zealand too, when you teach adults of their pronunciation or their use of words? Are you doing something similar also when you're here in New Zealand, because there are lots of non-mother language, what do you say?
Mother tongue. Yes, well, I haven't been in New Zealand very much, of course. Basically, I've been away from New Zealand for about 40 years and only back in this year. And I've done a bit of work with some university students, really people trying to get into university and improving the quality of their English by making use of the IELTS testing system, which I had some experience with in Kiribati. I was acting as the agent there. So I got to know that and found that was a very good one for not just for people to go for university study, but in fact for people to function in a society other than their own, particularly where they've got to work in English, that it covers speaking, writing, listening.
I was just wondering, that there's so much teaching at the moment that is online, but where you can't teach the same way if you're in front of the person or if you are on the other side of the computer.
Yeah, this is so, and particularly pronunciations, and where people have questions, you come up against a word, and you can look in the dictionary and find there are 20 meanings, and, you need a teacher. But what I've found is I can make a great use of material that's available online. It's just excellent material, but it does need a teacher.
Yeah.
To work with students on it, and that produces pretty successful results quite quickly.
Yeah. And the conversation is important.
Very much so. And giving people confidence that they can speak and people will understand them. And so many times, Fiji is probably has the best speaking of English around the Pacific, maybe because they've got multiracial society with large numbers of Indians as well as Fijians and, of course, a smattering of other groups as well. So they've probably been forced to work in English to be communicating with other groups. But the confidence is all important. Once you have that, you can go ahead and even if you make mistakes, you can still be understood.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody learning a language can avoid mistakes.
Oh, absolutely not. Otherwise, you have to be quiet.
And some people are.
Which is not good if they then want to express something that they want to say something and they can't say it because they lack of words or of confidence. Because
that's right.
They are afraid of making mistakes. I make mistakes all the time, but I don't. It's a way to learn.
You're quite brazen in the way you make mistakes. And everybody can understand you anyway.
So how was it in Indonesia? Tell me more about, not Indonesia, about Timor-Leste.
Timor-Leste. Well, I went there just after the breakaway from Indonesia, so it was a fairly warlike situation. And then unrest occurred because expectations weren't fulfilled. But as mentioned before, a big mix-up of languages, trying to work with different ones there. So largely my work was trying to make sure that the staff of the teachers' college were capable of handling the English and then supervising their studies so that they could manage to get the knowledge that they needed. And then my very limited knowledge of the other languages that we're working with, well, sometimes we had to do discussion of that to make sure that the concept got across. That was the key thing.
And also I think that if you have teachers or if you have priests, that you said that you also teach priests, I think it's important that they know English very well, because the English has almost become a lingua franca in the Vatican. So, whereas still Latin is spoken, but a majority of bishops, I understand, are not so confident in Latin and are talking English now.
Yes, we find as international order, the Marist Brothers, we tend to work in English and Spanish as the two languages, even though in theory we have French and Portuguese and Italian, but the common ones. And as you say, it's more or less moving towards lingua franca. It's the same problem. And then again, you really have to have a good depth of language if you're going to try, for example, to be talking about theology or spirituality, the scriptures. You've got to really have a good understanding of the language to be able to teach it.
Yes. And you said that you are teaching science, which is quite different again.
Yes. Yes, and again, you have to have the depth of knowledge of the English to be able to teach the science. So it becomes a difficult thing. I found in my early days in Tonga particularly, I got the opportunity to send staff members overseas, and I would try to get people to New Zealand or Australia and to do a course of some kind there, and much of it was the knowledge for their subject, but more importantly it was to be talking with people who used English fluently. Yeah. And to come back with a lot of confidence as well as a fairly good grasp of English. I found that was very successful.
And I could imagine that you are better understood than some English speakers from other English-speaking countries who have very strong dialect or accents. The New Zealand English is quite neutral, the way that you speak it at least.
Well, probably from the fact I've been out of New Zealand more than I've been in it. So by living in so many different countries, I've tried to avoid too much of idioms, because that's problems where people can't understand.
And
the other
problem,
yes, and the other problem with New Zealand English in particular is people won't open their mouths and will speak too fast. And so having to slow down like that, I've often enough been accused in Europe of being an American or in America of being British, and don't tend to get called Australian or New Zealander very much at all when I'm in that part of the world anyway.
Yeah. The other day when I talked to Brother Kieran and Bob Wilson, we mentioned that if you learn another language, you learn more about your own language. And in your case, you are teaching your own language. And while teaching your own language, you are more aware of what you're saying. So you're not going to mumble and to talk too fast, because you want to bring a message across.
This is right, yes. And it's easy enough as a teacher to sort of rush through the thing and not really pay attention to what your students are learning.
Yeah.
I've learned from a long way back, it's what's received in teaching that matters, it's not what's taught.
Yeah.
And so I've had to try to develop skills and ways of checking that, and of course with another language you have that much difficulty.
Yeah. What was one of your highlights that you had in your long time of teaching?
Well, I suppose more importantly, the fact of being somebody from another culture, coming in, and I've certainly learned vast amounts from the different cultures that I've lived among, but the other thing is that I can bring another viewpoint, and so students just in talking of life and well, any time that you're teaching any subject, a part of yourself is in that. And so what happens is my own attitude, my own background is coming through to students. And so they're getting quite a different viewpoint from their own culture. And for quite a number of them, this is the same kind of thing as you were saying. It's when you're dealing with a foreign language, a foreign culture, you're understanding more of your own.
Mm-hmm.
And so the whole way of getting people to think, getting people to realize that the way they've been brought up is not the only way that you can be brought up.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other ways in which you can do things, and that's fine. You can make choices. But if you are effectively enslaved to the things that are in your own culture, then you're so limited.
You widen your horizon with another language and another culture.
Very definitely. Yeah. And in learning a language, you're definitely learning a lot of the culture.
Yeah. And I mentioned the countries, Tonga, Fiji and Timor-Leste, but I understand you've also been to Kiribati for a while.
Oh, yes. I spent several years there as principal of one of the big high schools.
How was the situation there? Because Kiribati is very much in the news about climate change, and I talked to the Kiribati radio program maker here from Planet FM, and he said, we Kiribati, we don't want to be climate refugees. We want to be migrants with dignity. What was your impression in Kiribati with people learning English? Did they learn English to survive, to be able to migrate with dignity?
There would probably be a lesser motivation. The main part of it was to get education, because without education you weren't going to get any sorts of jobs. And particularly in Kiribati, there is a huge migration to the main island, South Tarawa. It's grossly overcrowded, one of the most crowded places on earth, where the island there would support probably about 10,000 people with its natural resources. And when I was there, when was I last there? It's about 8 years ago now. There were 60,000 people on this, and the housing is very primitive. And of course, they're building, if a new area of sand appears because a storm has put up some sand, somebody's very likely to build a house on it and claim it. And of course, the next storm can come along and remove it. Or it might be a storm 20 years hence, or a causeway was put in and this suddenly made parts of islands disappear. And the same problem is occurring as you get rising sea level. You don't kind of notice it so much day to day, but storms become much more damaging. So even in the 4 years that I was there, there was a notable change in the damage done by storms. From first I was there till the end of it. And then after I went, the house that I lived in there had been built about 25 years before, and storms came very close to it, but it never come inside the house. But within a year after I left, there was water from the sea came into the house, and this happened a couple of times after. So obviously the situation is getting worse. Some of the islands of Kiribati are rather higher, but there's no way that large populations could be transferred to there. So really there has to be the migration, and you must look at migration with dignity. I don't think the country would disappear, because some of the islands, you could have a sea level rise of 6 or 7 meters. They would still exist. However, it would be a totally different country from what it is now. And of course, its resources are essentially the sea, not the land.
And their connection is mainly to New Zealand and Australia, so English becomes even more important.
Yes, and it was, of course, British colony.
Yeah.
And then they got loaded with a couple of extra groups of islands, really. Kiribati is rather strange in that it consists of the westernmost islands, which is the old Gilbert Islands, hence you get Kiribati. And then you've got the Phoenix Islands. That's where there's great searches going on at present for Amelia Earhart, and pretty well uninhabited. And then away out to the east, you've got Christmas Island and the surrounding ones there. And they're so far apart that you can't fly a plane from a small plane internal to Kiribati, can't reach the other islands. So you have to catch the bigger plane, go to Nandi, and then go out to Christmas Island. I think I paid less to travel around the world than to travel from Tarawa to Nandi to Kiribati, Christmas Island and back.
Oh, my God.
So very expensive.
Yeah.
And if you go by boat, it's nearly 2 weeks.
Oh, isn't that what the Prime Minister did a few months ago, last year or so? Did she travel to, one of the islands and it took her 2 weeks? Wasn't it to Kiribati?
Oh, well, it could well be. Yeah. And if you travel by sea, yes, it would be a couple of weeks. A lovely sea voyage, but even so, the boats aren't all that good and they do break down. So internal communication's quite a problem. Every so often a ferry sinks and therefore there's a disaster. But you can see them coming in the sense that No, the maintenance is not very good. The equipment for safety isn't very good. And so you can end up with a large number of people being lost. And every year, of course, fishermen get lost because they small boats and get out of sight of land and haven't really very much of navigation skills. And so becomes a drift voyage.
And how big is the school in Kiribati that you were teaching it? Or you were
that
director?
One was pretty big. It was over 1,000. The school I had, I was trying to reduce the numbers somewhat because it was too unwieldy to offer the options available, offer quality. So it would be about 900.
Yeah.
And yes, it was secondary, going from what would be in New Zealand level 7 up to level 13.
Do you think that many of your students are still in Kiribati, or have they tried to emigrate?
Well, it certainly makes it possible to emigrate, and a good number do. Those going for study may study locally for 1 or 2 years, but will then go to countries like Fiji for the University of the South Pacific. In Tonga, I knew a bit more of that because I was there much longer, and found that after 20 years or so, the major effect of the school had been to permit certain people to migrate much more readily than others because they had the grasp of English to be able to do it. Our intention in going was to try to make them more able to fit into their own society.
Yeah.
But the major effect, in fact, was to migrate.
Yeah. Well, every good intention has two sides, and I think it would be good if there are some who stay there to educate the people who are in the islands, but maybe they come back after a while.
Many
and they
do.
Just have some experience overseas, and then they come back after a few years, just like you've come back to New Zealand now.
Yes, in many ways, that's the ideal, that people should really be able to get a good grasp of English by the fact of working and studying in a country like New Zealand, and then go back and be able to contribute to their own society. Yeah. And a good deal of that does happen.
Yeah.
So perhaps I shouldn't be content with stopping after 20 years. I should be looking at what's happened after 40.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, but it's important, the message that we all have to constantly refresh our knowledges on different things, and especially when you're teaching, refresh your language skills.
Yes, you'd be a foolish teacher to stop learning yourself. Perhaps that's the time to be buried as soon as you stop. And then if you're trying to work in a foreign language, I'm of course mostly concerned with people trying to learn English there, you must keep learning it. You can't say, I've reached the stage, therefore I don't need to learn anymore. That's where the traps come in. Mm. And in fact, you will deteriorate unless you keep learning. So attending courses, just doing a couple of half hours a week or something like that, and so much can be done online, but we really must try to help those who have migrated to learn English and learn better English.
Thank you very much, Brother Chris. And so let's see what you can learn at the Mercy Spirituality Center. Well, Pope Francis called us also to develop a closer relationship with the sacred scripture. Another thing that we'd have to read and read, because every time we read the sacred scripture, we discover something new, or we discover it in a different way. Well, at our Mercy Spirituality Center, we are going to have Father Kevin Waldie, who comes to the center, and he lectures at Good Shepherd College and is going to give a muffin talk, an evening talk on the 21st of November. It's a Thursday from 7 to 9 p.m. And the title is Gratitude in the Bible, Gracious God of Israel and Jesus, Son of God. In this session, we will explore the biblical idea of gratitude and how it applies to everyday life. On Friday, the 22nd of November, Margaret Bowater will facilitate a DreamWork 202 workshop from 9:30 to 12:30. And on Saturday, the 30th of November, from 1:45 to 4 o'clock, Letitia Putenbadat will facilitate an Ignatian contemplation for Advent. This will be a two-hour prayer experience in the tradition of St. Ignatius of Loyola. Please note that this program is not in our booklet. For all events at our center, please register with us per phone at Auckland 09-638-6238 or through our website at www.mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz. I wish you all a good Friday and a good week ahead. And thank you very much, Brother Chris, for having come.
Thank you, Bertha.